Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to OG Dry Bones, Valley of Dry Bones. Tonight we have a very thought-provoking topic based off of what all the holiday and cheer that we've been doing for Dr. Martin Luther King. We're going to do an in-depth study on the civil rights movement, and we're going to take questions from the audience, those of you who have questions. If you are going to call in, you know the routine. You hit number one, and we'll put you in the queue. But tonight, before we get started, before we start letting people on, we want to take a look at this iconic character, the one who, when I was growing up, you know, our mamas and grandmothers were crying when he was assassinated. I was kind of young then. But then when I look into the history now as we get older, we got the in-depth information. We have all the internet and so far books and different writings, different people who wrote books on the assassination and all so forth. And we get to see now what actually is taking place. Now we get to examine it. I have come across some frightening and sometimes not even talked about information. Many people do not realize that the civil rights movement, and let's just take that period. At that time, you know, as I and many of you who know history, I don't tell you this, but we were being treated at a high level of violence, discrimination. We couldn't do hardly anything without any problems from white power structure. But at the same time, I want y'all to hear this, at the same time, we had businesses. At the same time, we had movie theaters. At the same time, we had our own little cab stands. We had our own juke joints. We had our own restaurants. We had our own laundry mats. We had our own cleaners. We had our own, you name it, we provided a service for the community. That era did a thing called integration. And it didn't happen overnight, but miraculously, all the businesses suddenly just disappeared. And it was like it was orchestrated. And it was done with precision. Gentrification came. It cut large tracts of roads and highways into black neighborhoods that were prosperous. This is done across the whole country. So, in us looking at these things, we have to take into account what happened. First of all, that word civil rights is a dangerous word. It comes from the Roman word civili, look that up, civili, which is a Roman type of government over the people. And being that this government here has a Roman structure, it kind of taken on that type of look. But there's some things we need to look at when it comes to talking about this man, Dr. Martin Luther King. How many of you really knew his name was Michael King? It's not Martin Luther King. His name is Michael King. His name was changed by his father upon the time when he started to preach. They gave him the name of Martin Luther, which is the great German reformer of the Reformation period, the Protestant Reformation period. And they changed his name to Martin Luther. German. Again, going into this, I'm going to keep going into this, the psyche of what they got us into. He changed the name to the German Martin Luther. And it was catchy. Sounded good. A lot of people was, taken by the name. Not many of us ever challenged the name, but just like they do with Obama's name, his name was also named Michael. But it's more to this story. During the time of this going on, tonight's topic is Martin and the Jewish connection. And I don't even like to say Jewish. I'm going to let everybody know the word Jew cannot possibly apply to the people calling themselves Jews based on the fact that they have no letter J in their language. So no, there is not a letter J in the Jewish language or the Hebrew. There is no J. It's usually Y. substituted with the actual word. They made a J in 500 years ago. And doing so, let's call them by the area that we know for them to come. That is Khazaria. Bolsheviks, revolution was going on at the time of not Martin Luther King, but earlier, before Martin Luther King was born, they had the Bolshevik Revolution. And I want you to know that many people are trying to, and I love my brother who said, we can't leave them out of the equation. Well, you can't. You can't leave anything historical out of the equation because it's going to give you most of the information if you check it up. But we don't have a history of denial about what is being told to us and what is really the issue today. W.D. Du Bois, as many of you know, to be part of the Talented 10th, and we'll be getting to the history of all that during February, where you'll see the Talented 10th was really put together for the, let's just say, a buffer in between those who had control over us. And I will show you the proof and everything. I'll give you the proof of what books have looked that up so you can read for yourself. But the race game has always been an issue. W.D. Du Bois said the biggest problem in the 21st century will be the race. We have a brother who is Ashkenazi, Khazar. His name is Benjamin Dasari. Dasari, which is like Israeli, but with a D-I-S-R-A-E-L-I. And he was part of what they call the Money Masters back in those days. We're talking 1844, when they tried to put the central bank here. And himself, quote, said the racial question is the key to world history. All is race. There is no other truth. At that time, they were doing their scientific research on species with Darwinism and so forth. They were concocting their plans for their superiority complex placed upon the world. And they were very successful. But these quotes were done by men of power and some women as well, but I'm going to deal with that at another time. So they had the concept that race was going to be their number one key in dealing with the future of history, and what they had created was a race game in which they would be the controllers. Well, in doing so, they had made every attempt to make whatever they had to bring into fruition, they already had the plan laid out. So let's move up a little bit to the Civil Rights era time. Before the Civil Rights era, a group called NAACP, which I mentioned that W.D. Du Bois was a part of, He was a figure, but he was not the initiator. It was initiated by a woman and a couple of Jewish Khazar individuals. One was Arthur Spengel, which is heard when you hear the NAACP Image Awards, they give him the Spengel Awards. These were Jewish money merchants who had controls with the Rockefellers and so forth, and they put this group together, claiming to be for the advancement of colored people. That is very strange that we had to have this type of vehicle to advance ourselves, based on the fact that they had nobody but Jewish presidents. During the time of Martin Luther King, there was no other group who was president over the NAACP but Jewish individuals. And these individuals had power over the NAACP. It wasn't until 1970 that they had, probably, no, I take that back, even a little further that, because his another brother took over in 1970. A little after that, where they brought in the first, I think, Whitney, they brought in the first black individual to run the NAACP. And during that time, they filtered all the money for this particular cause. Now let's get back to Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King, and I'm going to get into calls so we can all get into discussion soon. Remember, all callers, you have 3 minutes to give your comments, and
this.
But like I said before, we had businesses. Today, we have not the same amount of businesses. Our unemployment levels are probably even more now than ever. And I'm not blaming Martin Luther King for all that. But Martin Luther King was just one person. But during his time, his speeches, he met with prominent people, Malcolm X, Elijah Muhammad, Muhammad Ali, you name it. It was a litany of interaction at that time. And we had the formation of the SCLC, SNCC. Found out the SCLC also had monies coming from the Jewish connection as well, because they planned on making America a socialist country. And that was their plan, because that was the same plan, if you do the research, the same plan they had when they were in Russia with the Bolsheviks. And if you look at the French Revolution and so forth, they brought the European concept of socialism to America, a centralized controlling bank system. They had to be in it, but they had to have a certain group to motivate them. And what better group? That was told they were not. They didn't do anything. They never contributed to history or civilization, even though that was a lie. Many of us did not know that was a lie because we did not have the power to read or write. And you're talking to a population that was predominantly ignorant. Now, let's face the facts. We had some great individuals. I can go through a litany, which I will next month, of some of the greatest contributions the country's ever seen. But, of course, we never had the money for the patents. We never had the money to be able to take our to the next level. And many of them was threatened and destroyed by sinister groups that did not want us to prosper. And I want everybody to know, this is not our fault. This thing is so entrenched and so deep that nobody could get out of this unless they had foretold knowledge about what was going on to them. Then you might have a chance. But being that we did not have the foretold knowledge of what this was happening to us, and that we did not know they would be using every tactic available, they made sure and they made decrees that would never let the black man and woman, because we knew, would not be recognized again out of the equation. They knew that if we keep these two figures down, we'll have complete control of these groups of people. So when they brought in the formation, and they noticed they picked preachers. And it's the reason why they picked preachers. But now I'm going to be honest with you. We got to start looking at the plans that were being put together. They were being done. These people thought this out. And they thought it out from the formation of the slave days. If you take a look at what's going on today, and I always say, why? Ask yourself, why always preachers are in our forefront? Let's take a good example of history. It says, just like they did in slave times, the capitalist ruling class builds up the church as their main institution for black community. Why? Because it is a seducing type of entity. It has power over your spirituality, which makes you draw into them. So basically, if they control your spirituality, they can control, which they did. What is called church, and they have taken over the church. They have always used religion against us, being that we are pure religion that we brought, and I don't even want to say religion, our pure spirit that we brought from here and that was already here, they took upon themselves to change that. And of course, you can change a person within 50 to 40, 50 to 100 years, you can change a person's psyche altogether. So let's be honest. This is what they're doing. I'm going to read a quote, and then we're going to start the conversation going, because I want y'all to realize that all of us need to understand what's going on today. It is here. Really understand the world, and therefore can't really go about changing it radically. Now, y'all heard that before. Let's leave it in the Lord's hands. This idea is running all over the place. Farrakhan, Cleflo Dollar, T.D. Jakes. And what it does, it makes a person wait and become stagnant in his own progress because you've been told that a religious entity is going to come and save you. We are the only groups that are waiting, basically, as a group of people, because most nations know that they have protection from their military forces. But we are one of the main groups that are saying today, let's wait on the Lord. And in waiting on the Lord, they have devised so many tricks against us that you cannot possibly win until we come into the right truth of what's going on. Now, let's be honest. The civil rights movement, when we integrated, and we all know that integration is basically saying to yourself, I want to be with you. We lost so much wealth. To this day, we are one of the, I think we're pretty much the bottom. Hispanics are beating us by a few percentage points as far as poverty, but we are at the bottom of the economic status per capita per household. When Dr. King was going around this country, he seen the poverty, he spoke about the poverty, and he was quite shocked at the poverty that the northern cities had. Let's just deal with the northern cities as well. When he came to the northern cities, he himself said that he had not seen that much hatred in the north as he did in the south. So we were talking about two regions of the country that had the same mindset about keeping black people in place. So it wasn't just the south. That's another misnomer. People say, oh, it's just the south. No, it's not just the south. It was the north as well. I think he got hurt in Chicago. People were throwing stuff at him. The man took a lot, and I'm not to take away anything from his legacy, but we have to really look at his legacy. He was actually stabbed as well by a black woman. I believe these are all orchestrated events toward him. But the main thing is, let's follow the money trail. Those who want to hold you in their grips always offer you money. And when they offer you money and you take it, let's be honest, they have control over your, of all your, all, anything you do, anything you want to move forward. They could give the board. They had board meetings on what kings should do. Many of the people who do not understand, they had people who had infiltrated the NAACP or the Civil Rights Movement on the purpose of making sure they kept King in place. When he walked around, many of his people that was with him, if you do the research, and I suggest you do, I put on the chat room. If y'all want to go into the chat room, I put a link up, and you can take a look at that link. And that link is very, very important to look at. And I'm going to tell you why I say that, because it goes and shows the connection of the money that the Khazaria Empire, a.k.a. Jews, were funneling to the Civil Rights Movement. And the whole time they were doing this, they were making sure that black people did not get bank loans, our housing was becoming more harder to get, urban renewal was becoming popular. They were enacting bills at the same time that was going to keep us in this position for quite a long time. Now, Dr. King signed this bill called the Voting Rights Act, which is in 1965. That's not that long ago. Anybody in their 50s know that that is not that long. And how could we think that somebody in the 50 years ago could change that fast? We're only 50 years from the man being assassinated, 1968. And once he was assassinated, you notice that they gave power to none of them except one person. And that one person we'll talk about a little later. But we just want to make sure that everybody's in the mindset of where we're going with this. Before we open up the calls, which will be in about 5 more minutes, I'll open up the calls, and I want your opinion on this as well. One of the persons that were very prominent to Dr. King, his name was Stanley Livingston. He was considered a communist, a Jewish communist, who wrote a lot of Dr. King's speeches. Many of you who do not know this, take a look at it. Do not take my word. He wrote many of Dr. King's speeches. One of the most famous ones has been said, "I Have a Dream." If you listen to the "I Have a Dream" speech, and when this happened, you're including people into your own movement that have not been affected as of yet. You know, you're telling people, women, and gays at the time were there, because I want you to know that Dr. King, one of his advisors was Ruskin. Ruskin was a known homosexual. James Baldwin also as well. The movement had a collage of everybody. And if you look at some of the pictures of the King marches, he had some Jewish individuals with him. He had a prominent rabbi. He had some other leaders that were of the major synagogues of Chicago and New York. And they were always in place. I want y'all to study that, because we need to look at this, because what happens is we're not being analytical about this movement. We're taking it as if it's a fantasy and it's a fairy tale, and we've been given it to us, and we must eat it and digest it without nobody saying nothing about the food we just ate. We have to realize that this thing was orchestrated for the main purpose, and it has totally happened. We are now in a socialistic regime. Anytime the government tells you have to have health care or you have to do mandatory things, that is the same thing that the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia did. And it's the same thing that's happening today. The parallels are so equal. But Dr. King did not have any problems. And I want y'all to know he also had Masonic ties as well. We're going to get into all that. Masonic ties is also there. He was actually murdered after he gave a historic speech at Masonic Hall. But many have said that his main death came about when he realized that he was telling Black America to be nonviolent. And I want you to realize that nonviolent approach was taken from a person named Mahatma Gandhi of India. And when you do the little research on him, and I will for next month, we're going to have him on looking at what he was even in the civil rights movement brought up. He didn't even like Africans. He lived in South Africa, and you can look up some of his speeches. He did not want to be associated with Africans. This is well known and documented. He did not want to have any dealings with African people. Matter of fact, when he moved back to India, he was so happy. He did not want any of his countrymen to have association or be associated with the Africans in South Africa, because he said, and they called them Kaffirs. He even had in his speech that they were Kaffirs, and he did not want to be at the level of a Kaffir. But yet he is symbolically connected to Dr. King, which I thought to be very strange, being that he had a country and he had a military force that followed him around. Dr. King also had a little military force, but it wasn't as prominent, it wasn't as big. It was called the Deacons of Defense. And those brothers were very instrumental, but not really talked about. Some people try to tell me, oh, we know about that. And that's another thing I'm going to hit on. The conscious community, and the word conscience means there's a coming together of material and knowledge that we all can agree upon. The key word is science. And the con means we all congregated into the belief of truth, consciousness, truth. And many of the conscious community are very, very upsetting when it comes to agreeing on things. It's either they agree with them and you don't agree with them, if I don't agree with you. And so we're argumentative at the moment about some of the things that we're going to talk about, because many of the generational differences do not want to say that some of these things Dr. King did and was affiliated with was wrong. And all we're saying is that we're going to analyze it, take a look at it, see if the progression of when Dr. King was living and what it is happened today. And I'm sure many of you know he was killed after the speech about Vietnam in Abyssinia Church in New York in Harlem. He said, how could he really tell black America not to be violent when we're promoting violence in Vietnam? And from that speech, that was the one that probably sealed his fate, because there's a known symbolism called the Boule. And I want y'all to look this up. The Boule men were only able to talk about domestic events. Matter of fact, King had they had no problem with King when he was going to the country. None at all. Some of these sheriffs in southern towns, they round them up. They didn't care. And they had no problem with it. It wasn't until Dr. King spoke about that Vietnam War, a war that was about rubber trees, B.F. Goodrich, the rubber plant, tires. That's what that war was about. So you're talking about corporations again, and he was going to mess with the corporation money, because guess who they had in the front line? They had a lot of brothers in the front lines. And if they would have made those brothers change their mind, they'd have had a problem, even though they still lost in so many ways. They'd have had a major problem. So in doing so, that would be the problem that they had with him. Prior to that, they had no problem with Dr. King saying anything and everything he wanted to say, because they were behind the scenes. If you notice, they had to have young people. And you got to ask yourself, who paid for the civil rights movement? It takes a lot of money to go from country. Well, it is a country. When you realize how the states are made, you're going from one state to another state, that takes money, that takes finances. We didn't have that type of finance to promote that type of agenda. So basically, what was going on was an agenda was being played for us. Now, the NAACP at that time had many prominent blacks that were a part of it. I want you to know something, everybody, and I'm going to show this next month. The eugenics program, that's right, the eugenics program got its start in a black church in Harlem called Abyssinian Baptist Church. Clayton Adam Powell, who was the Supreme Court justice at that time, he was also a preacher. He allowed Mary Springer of the Planned Parenthood at the time, her agenda, to promote her agenda in the church. And as you know, Planned Parenthood is still in effect today. So you can see all these forces was in the mix of making sure we stayed off balance. Now, I'm going to get into a brother. I got a brother online here, and I got another one. I told him I'm going to bring him in. Brother Luckner, you still out there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Brother, good. Give me your little assessment. What you think the civil rights movement and Dr. King and all that I just said, you know, about the Jewish influence. Do you see that and how it has affected us, and do you see how it has moved us anywhere?
First of all, let me say doing a great job, man. Keep up the good work. I think being that I'm of this generation and reading up on the history and seeing what came about after the civil rights bill was signed, it has its plus and its negative, but the negative has proven to outweigh the positive in terms of what we've lost, like you said earlier, in terms of we had our own businesses, we had our own communities on solid grounds. Our economics were closely tied to the neighborhoods and communities. But once integration set in, we ended up losing our brightest and our most productive. Just pretty much abandoned and left the communities as they are. And what we see today, it's pretty much a result of generations upon generations that never picked up the mantle and repaired the damage that was done. And So it's almost like a double-edged sword that, you know, we have yet to pull out of our womb, right, practically, you know, metaphorically, you know. It allowed for individuals to, to progress and achieve on a collective level what we lost. I pretty much personally come to realize that what we lost is much greater than what we gained in terms of, like, individual success. And now come to find out that it was part of you could say from some research done by some of our elders that the heavy Jewish influence, the other agendas that were pretty much attached to the movement that pretty much further drained the energy, because at the head of the movement itself, we discovered that the heavy Jewish influence, the infiltration, the directions being manipulated and controlled by those who really have their own agenda, mainly the Jewish. And now you mentioned the homosexual brothers that were part of it, and of course the Jewish as well. So we have the other influence that really, because of our maybe negligence or maybe entrusting that the mission statement was somehow applied to our plight, that we can allow anyone to come in, especially of the Jewish persuasion, to sympathize and pretend to be aligned with the ideals. In reality, they have their own agenda in the process. It's something that kind of caught us by surprise, I would say, but it's kind of like too late for that. It's like spilled milk. But the thing about it is, like, we haven't done anything to kind of maybe regather ourselves and reevaluate it.
Because
the loss itself, the loss has affected so many generations, and we see it. Every day we go in our neighborhoods and in our communities, and we see that there's something just not right. Something has happened, but we're refusing collectively to revisit the scene of the crime per se, you know, and see what went wrong, or it's just that our leaders that have put themselves in position to help.
Let me ask you a question. Are you on you're on a cell phone? Are you on a cell phone?
Yeah.
I think you're going in and out a little bit. You're going in and out a little bit, so kind of be careful with that. Hold on. Let me take another caller on that one, because your phone is going in and out right quick. I got from 210s. Look like Texas. Texas, you on the line?
Yes.
Texas, you on the line?
I want to comment on something you said earlier. Now, you said most times they would use the churches to get their message out to the people, right?
Uh-huh.
So, in other words, are you saying that church and religion is used as a form of mind control to control us?
Yes. I'm going to say, being that most of the Jewish Sigmund Freud, some of the ones that were doing the psychology at the time, they were doing massive studies on different groups of people, and what better group of people to study on is one who had formerly enslaved. So basically, they had a lot of free reign to do a lot of things with us, to learn us to a T. And being that a lot of these eugenic scientists were in the United States, and they knew our positioning on how we felt on things, they were easily able to manipulate us. So I'm pretty sure that the movement of eugenic scientists, which is race science. I want everybody to know eugenics is nothing but race science. That's why that brother who said in 1845 the race would be the main thing. That's in 1845. So, yes, that is exactly what I'm saying. I'm saying that they infiltrated to get their agenda across, and they had to use somebody, and they used us, which would be an easier prey to use because, like I say, we didn't know much at the time, and we were in a position when we were just pleading for help. But what do you think about, you know, the part of the country, what do you think about what's going on? And would Dr. King be happy about it? Would he be happy in our positioning now, where we at?
Yeah, I think he would be very pleased that progress has been made from the time when he was around to now. It has been some progress been made, but it's been a lot of false progress been made too. We're not as far along as we should be, because racism still is a powerful tool that is being used against us in today's society. Now, one thing I've noticed, by me living in Texas, the Mexicans and blacks are uniting. I see it happening slowly. They are uniting, becoming to understand and explore each other's avenues, which is a good thing. But if the white man had his choice, he would prefer that not happen, because he don't want us to be close to no other races, I don't feel.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the things I'm noticing, that if there is any groups that are closely entwined with us, it would be from that particular persuasion, the Spanish islands, South America, Central America. They should be able to identify with what we went through, based upon that many of them have went through it too. Only thing they have over us is they have man identification that they can say, I'm from such and such, and they stand by when they bring and raise their flag. But I think Dr. King, he meant well for everybody, but when your people are so far behind, you can't really concentrate on the people. And it should really be more or less telling us about the dream that was all men are created equal, but that's not the case, because we were not in the same positioning as those who had power. We didn't have the same type of power of the housing, the banks. We didn't have the infrastructure. We didn't have the power, but we did have businesses, which was key to most of our survival back then. And now, crafty, and I say crafty, means they have usurped the businesses so smoothly over the past 50 years that we might have barbershops, we're going to have some mortuaries, we're going to have some form of food, but nothing that is substantially industrial that can make us industrialize us, give us some type of more jobs that we can create, because we can't keep waiting for them, because they're not. We're at the stage now, we can't even wait for nobody anymore. If some got to give, and that's where we are. I don't think they'd be happy to know that Detroit has went bankrupt. And I think he'd probably have a heart attack if he knew the fact that most black people, after the parade, they go home and we do not even have a discussion. We don't even have a symposium of what's next. None of the think tanks that are after these parades, and you know, we're drinking and having a good time, but when the parade's over with, we still have high poverty. We still have high crime. So we're not really having a debate about what's going on. That's what we're trying to get in the psyche of the people tonight. Hold tight, stay online. I'm going to get to you again, so don't leave.
Yeah,
so don't leave. Over. 786. 786, you're going to lie.
Hello, Mark.
Yo, brother, I can hear you. You on the cell phone?
Yes, sir. Hold on.
Speak closer.
Yeah. Can you hear me better now?
You're on the air.
Okay. Sound far away. Okay. I wanted to touch on something I think I heard one of the brothers say a few minutes ago. Yes, the church was heavily involved in keeping our people calm. I like the way that Malcolm X said it best. He said, church is like Novocaine. And I'm not going to say that every single church is like this, but at that time, during the Big Six, if you will, the civil rights movement, the church was like Novocaine. If you're in pain, it's not that you're suffering, but you're suffering peacefully.
keep on suffering, but you're suffering peacefully. They want you to keep hush hush. That's why they say love your enemy as yourself. You know, it's not natural if you love someone who's trying to hurt you, someone who's trying to lynch you, someone who's trying to kill you, someone who's trying to rape you. You don't love someone like that. That's against the very law of nature. A cat don't make a rat don't make friends with a cat. A cat in most cases don't befriend a dog. A rabbit don't befriend a wolf. A deer don't befriend a lion. Never does a prey befriend the predator. That's not natural. That's not natural. So yes, the church was heavily involved in lulling us to sleep and keeping us calm, cool, and stay calm, Negroes. Stay calm, Negroes. Don't get rebellistic. Don't get out of hand. Stay calm. Stay cool, calm, collective. That was the mentality that the church was teaching us. You know, in fact, you know, Jesus, when you read him in the scripture, the church is really preaching on Jesus, but Jesus was a revolutionary. This wasn't Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. They've been doing it 450 some odd doggone years. They know exactly what the hell they're doing. There ain't no secret. When we gonna realize this? And then on top of that, Brother Jordan, you said something earlier about how the masses of people don't know this because it's not being really taught. So if they're depending on public school education to teach them something that they need to know, that they want to know, that is something that they need to know, then that's the problem. We're depending on the news to tell us what we need to know. They're not getting paid to tell us what we need to know. They get tell us what they want us to know, period. We have too much faith in Child 4, Child 6, 7, 10, 33, 39, Child 3, all of them. We have too much faith in that. Do our own research. You know, so I'm going to put that in there, Brother Sloan.
Yep. Very good, brother. Appreciate you for that comment. I've noticed that a lot of what's going on with the church, because they do have the ear of the people, mostly they're filled with our people on Sunday, but they don't give a actual historical facts about some of the things that have taken place. So when the people leave, they leave with a misconception. And so even today, with all that's going on with the out in the community, today was a perfect time for the churches to really have a sit down and let's discuss. But they won't, because this is a taboo subject. Because once you start to tell the people and say, hey, the money trail did not come from us. The money trail came from the Khazars, and the Khazars funded most of the civil rights, then you got to ask them why. Why? Anybody, a thinking person, which is an analytical person, should have said, why would they finance us when really they don't treat us that well? Most of your slumlords were Jewish. Most of your big banking establishment are Jewish. And most of your, let's just say, financial institutions, along with those of the monarch families, are Jewish in some form or way, or Jewish control, or they're from Germanic control, which I want to get into that another period where we'll see where it's called the Setar Law or the Jewish Law during feudal times. If you look that up, the Jewish Law during feudal times, you will see a lot of what we're going through today. But he's absolutely correct. I don't see how anybody can say that this was constructive when so many ways our people don't know nothing about the true history of what happened. They don't have a clue that some of the murdering that went on in the South and in the North was done and orchestrated to create hate and hysteria. These people had known that they was preying on the psyches. They had television. Television was another one of their tools in their propaganda. If you look at some of the things that they were talking about during the 1940s and 30s, you will see how their television was used to promote their civil rights movement and to give the nation a shock treatment. At the same time, they had the president murdered. Same time, Malcolm X murdered. Same time.
Yeah.
And all the nations in Africa but under attack. That's another thing we don't want to put into play. While King was marching around in the United States, and the continent of Africa was under siege. They had carved it up, and they had made sure they had their interest in it. That's why, to this very day, they're still there. All I'm saying is, let's look at how their agenda is still in effect, and our agenda fizzles out. That's the problem. Their agenda's in effect. Our agenda is now fizzling out. Now, the youth don't know anything about what I'm talking about, because guess what? We are made King almost a saint. And I probably, when we're probably dead and gone, most of us, in another 50 years, he'll be a saint. One of the Jesuit popes might decide to make him Saint Martin Luther, because guess what? His name is Martin Luther the Reformer. And so, bam. Have we even asked the question, why did we have to change his name? That's another question. I know why, but I want y'all to think about it. I'm going to go to 786-440. You're on the line. 786-440. 786. All right. I'm going to go to 786-349.
Hi, brother. This is Malaika. All
right.
I really thank you for your show and for your educational, you know, output. Many things that I don't even know, so you're putting it out there. I want to make a comment in reference to what you have said. Well, a lot of, you know, factors here, but in reference to what you said about eugenics, it's very interesting because, yes, this Nazi Hitler-loving woman, Margaret
Sayer,
she was the head one, you know, who established the whole parent planhood, and she targeted the churches. And, you know, they have a way, because they're psychologists. They have a way to knowing how to hypnotize. They know all the secrets of, you know, all the spells that they can use. And yes, they were able to get in the black churches, unfortunately, through the preachers, and begin this movement of eugenics. And it's interesting, because I did not know this, when you said that that movement was on the first church was in New York and Harlem. Now I'm going to specify this because I need to specify this because I'm Cuban, because of Fidel Castro. Once again, who is Fidel Castro? Fidel Castro's last name is not only Castro. It is Castro-Root. He is a Zionist. He is he's part of the Khazarites. He's part of the Jesuit order. And when he comes to the United States, yes, he is. And when he comes to the United States, okay, which is very odd, because then we can't go, you know, we can go to Cuba, but if we go to Cuba and we start yelling out, down with the regime, well, you know, we get reprimanded. But he can come down here, and the first place he goes to, and I've seen it with my own eyes, he goes to the black Baptist churches in Harlem. Of course, there's a history behind that. But he is one who practices eugenics. He's a hypocrite. He's a white supremacist. And when it comes down to Martin Luther King, I didn't know about his name. I didn't know that it was changed. To me, Martin Luther King was another puppet on a string. Unfortunately so. He was another puppet on a string. And just like JFK, JFK was a man that was integrated you know, with the powers that be, but he went against them, and that, you know, that was a flash on his life. And to me, that's what occurred with Martin Luther King. And many,
sorry about that. Let me just make sure people know understand what you just said, too. It's strange, and I'm going to have to back you up on this because I've been doing a lot of research on this, and most of the guerrilla revolutionaries always went to Harlem. Castro stayed in many of the black hotels. You're absolutely correct. And you have to ask yourself, when I found out that Fidel Castro was a Jesuit, a bell went off in my head and said, wait a minute. Is that the reason why he's not touched? Because remember, the Pope has went to Cuba two times. The last two popes have been in Cuba. They did the Masonic ritual where they kissed the ground, which is showing the world that this is my territory. Do not touch this man. Because remember, America is 90 miles away. If they want that, they can go get Noriega, Saddam Hussein. Why couldn't they go get Castro? And so that is something to be looked at. That is something to be looked at. And I believe at that time, when they were doing all this, they were putting in this, the communist, what I would say, the communist manifesto agenda. Now, anybody who doubts what I'm saying, go and look up the communist manifesto by Karl Marx, who was Jewish, Trotsky, who was Jewish, and you will see that they're doing the exact same thing of the manifesto. So I think we're going to have to take account of this because there's no reason for somebody to be able to live this long and to be so hated, supposedly hated, and never touched. And he's supposed to be such a threat and a human rights person. I'm starting to understand quite well what you're saying because if he was that bad in human rights, why is he still there? You understand? And exactly. I think we should talk about that subject. That subject needs to be talked about more. I think we'll get a better idea between the two people because, let's be honest, Cuba is full of African people there. Go ahead. I hear a voice. Go ahead.
Yes, well, look, I wanted to kind of – I heard what you were saying. I was kind of inquisitive about that a while back, but – we also have to remember that the population of Cuba itself was, I think, if not 85% black.
Correct.
And
yes, but they're under, they're under oppression.
Yeah, that's what
I'm
saying. But I'm saying if they were to subdue them, and maybe it was a plan of subduing that large number of population of blacks, just like they have in Haiti right now, kind of subdued. And not to have them become a model. So it's almost like a chess game, maybe, you know. That's why I kind of looked at it, because that 80% black is pretty quiet. It's a quiet voice in Cuba. You really don't hear much about or even see them on the scene.
No, brother,
you know?
It's not. No, brother, it's not quiet. It's not
Martin
quiet,
King.
Brother.
Hold on. Let me ask you this. What you said, that what about the 85%? Because that say for many of these leaders, like you just said, were coming to Harlem during the King period. I'm sure. I don't know if he met. I don't think I have a picture of Castro with King, and I can't say I found one yet. But I'll probably go look for one. Anybody who knows if he was with Fidel, but I know he sat with many of the contemporaries.
He did.
Up there. And I'm thinking to myself, now that I'm taking a look at things, I'm thinking, what was the meaning behind that? I mean, it was a time. I'm gonna tell you, I do understand why black people in the U.S. Went to Cuba because they felt better treated. Many of the singers, Nat King Cole, you name it, all the I could see Nat King Cole and quite a few. Duke Ellington and you name it, all the jazz greats were all going there. I could see why that why people had a little fondness of Castro based off that. But again,
But also,
go ahead.
I was going to say, don't forget about his exploits in Angola and going to war with and defeating South Africa. So it's almost like it's kind of a tight rope to kind of really label him in such a negative light, even though he was a Jesuit. I mean, this man actually put soldiers on the ground to fight apartheid or the expansion of apartheid.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying.
Hold on.
What I'm gonna put into effect where, let's just say this. Being that they're Jesuits, and not most of us know that the Jesuits is the army of the Vatican, and being that we know that they have covert operations, I would assume maybe some of this was covertly put in place, but basically. Especially in Africa, because just because a person goes to Africa, and I'm starting to see that, does not mean he's there to help Africa. He could be put in place to spy and maybe create war so they can, opposition. I'm learning now that most of the opposition, if a person is that beloved by the Pope, and I'm saying, man, the Pope loves him, but we're saying he's a human rights individual problem, but the Pope loves him. You know, you got to ask yourself something. And these are the questions that I'm glad we're talking about, because this is the same time frame that Martin Luther King. Notice, Martin Luther King gets assassinated, but Fidel Castro doesn't at all. There's not one attempt that I can know of that was successfully being placed on him. And besides the Bay of Pigs, and I think that was a Russian thing. Remember, again, we're dealing with the Russians as well. So. Yeah. Let's keep that thought going. Y'all stay online. I'm trying to get some more calls in here because y'all starting to get international on us. That's beautiful. Because remember,
I wanted to mention something else about the Vatican. Okay? The Vatican also had a contact with the Zionists with the Holocaust, with these scientists that were supposed to be put on trial, and the United States opened the doors for them to come through, and that's how they built NASA. So there's a connection between the U.S. and the Zionists and the Vatican. The Vatican were financing Hitler for the eugenics movement. So there's just a vicious circle of connection here of a big, disgusting agenda.
It's a big agenda, and it's very, very big, and I think it's coming from all directions. That's why I tell people you can go on www.drybonesconnection.com, and you will be able to see a lot of what we're talking about right now. www.drybonesconnection.com, you will see I have Castro with the Pope, and they're in a Masonic stance. Together, they're in a Masonic stance together, and so I know for sure that the connection is there. Those of you who want more calls, I told you everybody. I see a lot of people online. Hit the number one; it'll give me an indicator that you want to say something. So I see a lot of calls. You got a lot of people listening, which is good as well. But there's a lot of calls out there, and
I wanted to mention something in this. It's been about...
Go ahead. What you say, brother?
I wanted to mention something, man. It's something I've observed over the years. Just like you have regimes come in and out, they do their mandate. It would seem that even in the system, because we always seem to think that we mysteriously mention that, well, they have an agenda. It would appear that there are regimes that come in, and some are more engaged on a military front. Some come in, they're more engaged on a more humanitarian front. But it seems like whatever regime that comes in tend to change or shift the directions, or whatever agenda it is. But we don't seem to be able to clarify or know what are the regimes, who are the regimes. But we do know one thing that's consistent over the years, that they've had these summits amongst themselves, wherever they call them, G7, G8, those to me could be the indicators of what regimes are coming in and what are leaving. and we collectively as a mass have not opened a sort of like a window into what's being discussed, what's the agenda, because they do have their little meetings and these G7 summit meetings where they do have the higher-ups in every nation to come in these secret meetings. Well, they're not secret because they do show them on the media where they're meeting, but they never give out like a itinerary or a discussion of what was discussed.
Right.
But it would appear that there are regimes that come in and go. I was listening to NPR about a month ago, 2 months ago, and they talked about the two brothers that headed the U.S. Foreign policy. These two brothers came in, and they pretty much spearheaded almost like a personal agenda against communist leaders that went against their interests. So they had at their whim the U.S. military, and they pretty much, you know, pushed their agenda. So until that regime left, where these two brothers, they call them the Koch brothers, I think they were, I don't know the name, I said the name right, but you have these regimes with mentalities where we have individuals that are ahead of these regimes that come in, and they may have an agenda, and they put forth the agenda for the duration of their mandate. When their mandate is up, another regime come in, and it switches. So it's like we can never see in what direction. It's almost like small personal wars, you know, between regimes. And it keeps the masses like on the ropes.
Now, somebody would have to, like say, for instance, we're dealing with when you say regime change, somebody has to be a backer. There's money behind all this. Like I say, the culprit always has to say, let's look at the money trail. And just like we were talking about how King was financed to go across the country, they had a agenda. The agenda is they want to bring in a socialistic government, which goes along with the Communist Manifesto, which goes along with their New World Order. And
yes.
King had an error, and most of these people who are out there, Fidel and everybody else, they have a part to play. King's part was a little bit more dramatic based on the fact that a lot of black people's hopes and dreams was placed into that. I believe that speech is very symbolic and very messianic in structure. First of all, a dream is not real. It's an illusion.
Wow.
And for them to say, mm-hmm. I have a dream, and one day I'm dreaming, that means he's not in his right state of consciousness. He's in a sleep state. So when they wrote these things, when they write this stuff, you know, it's almost to the point where you have to say to yourself, you know, what is the agenda behind this speech here? You know, many of his speeches, being that I told you earlier, was written by Stanley Livingston, and I want everybody to look him up. He was part of and financed by that. Now, let's get back to this just for a minute for this Jesuit. I'm getting a lot of calls, texts in. And most of the Jesuits, and I'm glad this came up. Let's kill this thing right here. Karl Marx, he was a Capto Jew, real name is Moses Medici Levy, published the Communist Manifesto. Nietzsche, same one. Let me just show you something that was said that is absolutely frightening when you think about it. So we can get to the Vatican part, and I got the paperwork here, and everybody look it up. I'm going to show you how deep this is. In 1830, a Jewish individual by the name of David Sassoon, remember the Sassoon family, Sassoon clothing? He was a Baghdadi Jew. The Jewish banker, David Sassoon and Company, this gentleman had branches in China, Japan, Hong Kong, used his monopoly of opium trade in this area on behalf of the Rothschild control government and trafficked 956,100 chests of opium, earning $1 million for the royal family in the Rothschild. Now, he's cloaked in his head. He has a head wrap on. He looks like a holy man. But then when you find out that most of the institutions in the United States were by opium, Yale University owner, opium dealer, Harvard, opium dealer. These people were drug dealers and every other type of dealer there is. And so we are not paying attention to what is being perpetrated upon us based off the fact that we've been given a sanitized version of this story as usual. But there is a problem with this Vatican and Jewish connection, because what happens is we tend to lose perspective of that. They're both forces are together. They're made to look like separate, but these forces are together. And they're working together. What? One is called, and I know you guys heard of it, called the Hegelian dialect, which means I call the cause and effect. There you go.
Yeah, the Hegelian dialect.
Thank you, bro. That's it. Y'all know all about that. You know, you call the effect, but you have the answer for it. That's what's going on. And they're doing a very masterful job. You have to realize these people spend night and day, which I always been saying, we don't want to have a think tank that thinks all day long. We want to have a meeting for a couple of hours, get mad because no one agreed with everybody, and then we leave and we don't meet no more. They have a meeting after the meeting. They don't play. They have a meeting after the meeting. They have agendas like Agenda 21, which is on the verge of taking full control of the planet Earth unless we start to say no. And we have to come to grips that Dr. King, I'm going to stay on that subject because y'all can go someplace too, but Dr. King and them did not know that their movement was be hijacked. First of all, let's take a look at something. Any of y'all been to the King Center in Atlanta? You would think they would have a statue of Dr. King. They have a statue of Mahatma Gandhi in front of the King Center.
Yep.
This is not by accident. This is by design. This is by design. The person, you think India got a statue of Dr. King over there, over the Mahatma Gandhi Institute? No, they do not. But we got Mahatma Gandhi in front of Dr. King Institute in Atlanta, Georgia. That's because when you become lackadaisical,
the question that is that, how is it that blacks don't even question that? Right? Why we don't even question it? Like, well, why is that there?
I would think that should have been questioned. I mean, anybody, I'm gonna go to another call. I see some more happening. I'm gonna give you this call a chance here. 305-789 you're on the air. 305-789-8376 You had your hand up. You out there?
Hello.
There you go. I heard you say hello. How you doing?
Oh, good evening. Outstanding. Thank you for taking my call.
You got a question, comment?
I'm not in Miami. I actually live in Polk County. And I'm trying to get more people, more people to listen to the pod and find out what's really going on. But I'm looking for direction in getting young people, you know, interested in what you're saying without all the religious, because it's like fearful for them, because it's been taught, you know, Jesus is, you know. And once you start to talk about the religious factor, they just like, they're fearful to hear anything that's against Jesus. And you're talking about, like, in the forum, talking about all the issues that are out here, and it's very good information. It's wonderful information that, you know, it's interesting, it's enlightening. But once you have so much religious, you know, when it's geared toward one religion, young people are fearful because they've been taught by their parents, you know, about Christianity, and, you know, it's like a taboo to go against Christianity.
and they really don't even want to learn, but they actually, they know that there's something different out there.
Right. And basically now, I heard the area you said you in. I want you to take my email address down because I would love to help bring that, because young people, I find, are fascinated once they actually see the real scoop,
yes,
and the real story. A lot of them are already hearing some of it in the rap music, so they deciphering some of it already, but
exactly,
it's not given to them whole. So if we can give it to them whole, I know how to exactly do it. As I say, if you go on our website, dryboneconnection.com, you will find different things, and I made it that way so it can be easy for people to explain this to others, because I found out it was a problem in getting this information out, because it was trying to sound too complicated, and it's not that complicated to see what they did. It's very easy to see. So take this number down, take this email address down, and please, I'll be in contact with you afterwards if you want to do something.
I took that earlier, and I had it. Right, I took that. My next question was about Reconstruction. My professor, maybe a year ago, had talked about Reconstruction and how is it that we can get this to the Supreme Court, you know, other than ourselves taking responsibility, you know, without being the, you know, the dumbest consumers on this planet Earth, giving all our money to, you know, the fashion industry and, you know, McDonald's, cars, you know, and all this stuff. How is it that we can revisit Reconstruction, you know, which Andrew Jackson derailed? Most people don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that we can get this back in the Supreme Court? You know, we're not depending on President Obama. I hope we're not, you know, because he's just a man. He's just, you know, a man.
Exactly.
And we really got to wake up. We had our 8-6 years or whatever we want to say, but we got to wake up beyond that. That is done. You know, we still have more problems. The only thing is that this ugly, you know, thing has been uncovered over the last 6 to 8 years. But a lot of people came in thinking, oh, this is our meal ticket. I don't want a meal ticket. I don't want my aunt. I don't want my city, my children to have a meal ticket. I want an education. I want something. I want to know better and know how to, you know, get this back on, other than pulling ourselves out of the economics of, you know, America. You know, we throw all our money. We claim that we so broke, but we take every dime we got, you know, claim that we broke, but every dime we got, we gear it towards something stupid.
And that's so
until
true.
Until the next, paycheck. But claim that we're so broke, we're so out of it, you know, we're so disgusted. But every time that we get in our pocket, as a matter of fact, my children get money, I dare them to spend it. I say, you know, stop letting money control you. You know, how is it that we can, and again, I'm sorry for going off, but this is my first opportunity to get on here, but this Reconstruction,
it's
getting ours.
You got. I give people time. So everybody got a 3-minute period. But I'm gonna give you something that you just said. You mentioned Reconstruction. No one's taught that. No schools teaching Reconstruction, and it's not even brought about in an intelligent debate about how we had so much then and lost it even to the Civil Rights Movement. We still had people in positions. But you mentioned a person named Andrew Jackson. Now, I want you to know something.
Yes.
This is what Andrew Jackson was saying in his day. He said, after 12 years with the Second Bank of the United States, ruthlessly was manipulated the American economy to the detriment of the people, but to the benefit of their own money-grabbing ends, the American people had no surprisingly had enough, and the opponent of this bank nominated Senator Andrew Jackson of Tennessee to run for president. Jackson was one of the few people that fought against the ruthless Rothschild Money Banking Institute. He was going to make new money as well. He did everything he could do. He even tried to weed out the government. But he said something that was so profound, which is right here. He said, I'm quoting him, he started out during his first term rooting out the banks, many minions, and from the government services, to illustrate how deep the cancer was rooted in the government, in order to achieve his end, he had to fire 2,000 of the 11,000 federal government employees based on the fact that they had infiltrated, just like they have today, the government. And the government is infiltrated, which is now not even a government. And that's another thing we have to realize. Once the bank takes control of the country, it turns it into a corporation based off the fact that it's only lending to those of its interest. And the interest is the corporations that now run America. And we know they are running big time. We got republics. We just have so much of the old oligarchy. That's the term I think everybody needs to learn, oligarchy. We need to learn the terminology of what's ruling. We're under a plutocracy, an oligarchy. We're not under democracy in the Republicans. No, we're not. That's a facade. We are under an oligarchy group of people. And we need to realize that in our minds, we must consider a new system of bartering exchange. We can no longer keep thinking money is real when we know it's not.
Yeah.
We have to start saying to ourselves, go ahead.
I like to add that these individuals or groups or whatever you want to call them that are running the country right now, you must understand that they themselves now are, their hands are probably being forced because you have emerging economies internationally like China, the BRICS, where they're separating themselves from that system because they understand what's been going on. But the thing about it, the American people on the average level are not aware. So it's like now they're probably under pressure or they're probably facing threats that they cannot clearly communicate to the American people. And they have to, their hands are being forced where they're going to either eventually have to take some drastic actions that we're not prepared for. So the layers of this system is so, how would you say, so well hidden that we're probably not even understanding what's really going on on the international level where, because of their dirty dealings and deeds, has forced the hand of other outside elements where the average American will have to either have to pay or suffer because of what they've been doing, you know? And that's another issue that we haven't taken into consideration because if there's a debt running, you know, and let's say the debtor demands payment and we are the collateral unbeknownst to us, you know, we're subjected to certain you know, rules of the game. And that has to be clearly communicated to the American people as well.
Dr. King's time, I'm asking everybody, do you think during Dr. King's time that they were aware of the federal corruption at the high levels? And was he aware of the straw man philosophy that's out now, that he knew that we weren't really who they said we were? We were just collateral. And I noticed he never talked about
I think he kind of put it together, but it was a little too late. Remember, he had a speech where he said he's feared that he has integrated his people into a burning house.
If
I remember the quote properly. I think King might have came to a realization.
Well, you know, maybe he came to the realization. I think he did then. When he said that we were going to be in the burning house. Now, no one talks about that. I'm glad you brought that up, bro. Because when a man tells you, I fear I brought my people into a burning house, and most of the time a burning house is really, severe fire, that's telling you,
yeah.
Hey, I'm bringing y'all into the death trap. Hold on, let's take another call. I think we got 210. You on the line?
Yeah, I was sitting back listening to everything, and everything leads back to me. This is the roadmap to the New World Order, and if church people heard us talking on the phone, they would say we were atheists because of the way we feel and the knowledge that was hidden from us that now is coming out. Now, as before, we were talking about what could we do to fight this, go to the Supreme Court, Well, what good was it going to do when we already know the system is set up in a Masonic structure? So if they don't want change, it's not going to be change. So what's next?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a very true statement, and the reason why I say I gave that was her viewpoint on that. You're right. Right now, the way it's set up, we can't really get justice under their system right at this moment. It's I don't see it happening. I'm to the point of telling people prepare yourself mentally for whatever comes down the pike, based on the fact that
yes.
We're too busy thinking. Our people not coming together at a rapid rate. First of all, we're too Hollywood. We're watching too much reality TV show. We're watching too much of these crazy. Like the sister said, we are consumers. So rather than consume this knowledge of consciousness, we're gonna rather consume some sneakers, and we're gonna consume some TVs and some stuff like that. We're not gonna consume.
But then also
other people.
We must understand. We must understand that we got to remove the spookiness behind the whole Masonic. How would you say? I like to call it almost like folklore on a lighter level. It's more of about light and knowledge, access to light and knowledge and information. Whoever's controlling it, and those who are not are really in darkness and are usually fall victim to the manipulation. So. We have to also realize that even in the concepts of the Masonic structure itself, it's more dealing with enlightenment and knowledge and the controlling of it, and those who don't have access to it become the controlee, the controls. So on that level, we remove the spookiness of it, and knowing that these people have access to information there, they are well planned ahead. So that give them the appearance of maybe having an extraterrestrial type knowledge and ability. But it's not. It's just about information and having a plan.
But you got to realize too, it's good Masons and it's not and it's bad Masons.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
So you got to look at that point too.
Yes.
You're seeing it. And I'm going to keep that vibe on there. Masonry, for those of you who are not aware of this, its true conception comes out of Kemet, comes out of that Nile Valley regions where they built these great pyramids and these great edifices along the earth, which are unduplicated today at this point in time. Many stonemasons can't even do the same thing. But they have very positive principles. And what my brother just said, they're dark Masons, which means they're on the dark side, and there are white Masons, which means not the color white, but mean in light and reluctant. What's happening is we are being played by different groups who have the knowledge from back in the period of the 1800s, when all this ignorance was in play, and they dumbed the people down through slavery, and it took a process of hundreds of years. We do not do this overnight. It takes hundreds of years to bring us to this conclusion that we're in. And we have a lot of people who want quick fixes. It's almost like a junkie mentality we got with our people. They got to have a quick fix, and they want this fix. After somebody has you in this position for 400 years, you want us to pop out of it. And it ain't going to happen that way. They just killed King less than 50 years ago. And so that's not even that long ago. So we still haven't even gotten over that because look how we're playing that situation. We're still playing with that reality.
Yes, yes.
And church has a lot to do with it. That's what the brother said, and I agree with the sister earlier. Because we got a one-dimensional track mind of religion, many of us, except for those of you who understand, we have been taken into a fantasy land about these stories and so forth like that. And when we add the stories up and we sit down with any people, you will find out that they get upset when you tell factual information that would be pertinent to their congregation. Because, see, they want to be the ones telling it because they want to be the ones that they control. And control is the whole thing we're talking about, man. The whole thing is based off control of people. What's happening now? I hear a lot of background noise, so now I'm going to have to try to mute that noise. If you guys are, if you tell those of you, if you're on the phone, please try to mute out the people you're around because it gives back, you get feedback. But it's gone now. Thank you. When we're dealing with that type of theology of forgive. Now, no one has a problem with forgiving, but you cannot forgive a person who is constantly trying to kill you. That's not that. You'll be genocide, and that's why the word genocide came into play, because you'll be easily wiped out. The reason why we're not wiped out, because our fortitude, our strength, some of us who have wisdom has kept this thing going. But the majority, the masses of our people are fighting any one of us. Right now, a call like this, if I was a Caucasian European talking the way I'm talking now, I would have probably over 500 callers right now. Actually, we'll have that many callers because I see it when I go to other sites that are white, that are saying similar things about America. They're jam-packed. They tell them to go to a convention. They're there. They say, hey, we got to get weapons. Man, they'll go buy a whole city up of weapons. We can't even get the word out because when we give the word out, it's considered, oh, man, that nigga don't know what he's talking about, man. I ain't talking, man, please. I ain't fooling with him, man. He's talking some crazy. You know, this is where we at. This is where we at. Now, Dr. Neely Fuller, who was at the time, I think it's in the 70s, he taught at Howard University. He taught Francis Quest Wesley. He's an old gentleman at this point. I would love to have him on the show. I'm going to try to see if I can get him. This elderly gentleman is so profound. He's actually saying now, flee from black people. Now, this is a person who is the mentor of Dr. Francis Quest Wesley. He is saying in some of his own, I have it on the website, flee from black people because they are going to cause you great harm. And I said to myself, man, that is so sad but true. Because we can't work together because during this time, the enviness of these groups, let's be honest, they don't kill. The Black Panthers was in that time of King. After King got rid of all them, Fred Hampton took him out. Well, Malcolm was before that. Then you had all the strife going on with the infighting after King was murdered. Who took over? Now, you would think somebody like Ralph Abernathy or somebody like John, what's his name? I can't think, he's a senator right now. Help me out if you remember the name. But who gets it is Jesse Jackson. And anybody who do research know that Jesse Jackson was not beloved by Dr. King. I hope y'all do the research. I'm not making this up. He was not beloved by Dr. King. Matter of fact, he was not even in the trusted circle. But yet, somehow he materialized as the spokesperson for Black America after Dr. King was assassinated. We got to take a look at this stuff, man. We got to quit thinking that everybody who looks like us is for us. No, no. These movies should explain that to you. You don't see Django. Samuel L. Jackson plays his part to the T. Look at the infinite. He told him, what is that nigga doing there on a horse? He was doing more worrying about it than the slave master was. That's what's happening today. They still, these people, that psyche is in people today. May not look like they are. They might look more better now, but their psyche is in people today. They envious of anybody who has their own authoritative way of doing things. They want to be under that because they've been told that, hey, I got to be under the white man. And the white man said it's good, it's good. Now, unfortunately, that was over 400 years of this type of teaching. Then you have the religion aspect of the teaching of slavery. Christianity, then Islam came next. During the next month, we're going to have the three-headed talk about religion and why black folks are gravitating to these three religions when they call the Western religions. Anybody in mainstream know the West is at the base level. The base level, and these are called, no, they ain't called just regular religions. They call the three great religions of the West, the Western religions. So understand that means these are base religions, base in mentality, very vicious, killing is always in the mix with these three religions. Always. Always. You won't, as long as they call the three great Western religions, you will see murder and mayhem, and you will also see the Vatican and part of it. One of the things was said earlier, I got the answer for it now. 1823, everybody, 1823, the Rothschilds take financial operations of the Catholic Church worldwide. So there you go. Look it up. So it's the Jesuits, all this is all in cahoots. And so the question is, and I'm going to take a few more calls, are we going to have to take an individual stand to take care of your own perimeter? When I say your own perimeter, your own space, your own world that you create. Because right now, as we speak, I know we want to be together and black power. I'm telling you straight up right now, they genocide in Africa. And the reason why you don't take it to heart is because you have the heart of stone. You have no sympathy, the creation of care. You have not the female principle, which has been destroyed. How can you love Mother Africa, as we say in February, we'd be wearing dashikis in church, yet it's being genocide at a high level. Every day there's something going on. Yet, come February, I already can see it, Reverend Chickenfoot, he going to have on a dashiki, and First Lady going to have on a dashiki. And everybody's gonna have some dashikis, and they're gonna be dashikied up, and they ain't gonna talk about none of the killing, none of the cobalt, none of the Congo being destroyed. They ain't gonna talk about none of that. Let me go to another call. About you. Having a good time. 727, you on air? 727, you on air?
Hello, this is Irene Olive Kate from St. Petersburg, Florida. How are you?
Thank you, my sister. How do you feel tonight? I'm glad you called. Go ahead. I know you got something to say.
I'm fine. I've been chiming in, as usual, trying to pick up the educational part of everything before I speak. I am just calling because I myself attended the Martin Luther King festivities today in St. Petersburg. And
okay. My,
what an embarrassment it was. Might I say, we are so lost as people, and I am a person who always tries to look at the good in everything to try to figure out a solution. But when I tell you, for a person whom we know, whom we see that stood for good, quote-unquote good, all I saw was, if it wasn't liquor drinking, weed smoking, everyone has naked music playing, and no one really knowing what's going on. I don't know. It was just so sickening to me. I couldn't even stay around. And you know me, I was down there on my soapbox preaching and trying to get through to our people. Yet I was, you know, when you're the minority, you're the one that looks kind of crazy and foolish in the whole situation. So I just say this: if we don't come to an awakening state really fast, it's all over. We are just so sleep. It was pathetic.
And I'm glad you're telling me that, because of course some of the parades here also had the same effects going on, to the point where I don't even go any longer. And I was always wanting to go and hand out flyers and hand out paper about, you know, do you know this is happening? We need to do this, warning the people. You know, you try to say to yourself, you know, I'm not rich and I'm not going to tell anybody that, you know, I got the solutions to everything. No, but you try to say, let's find some like-mindedness. When you out there in those parades, they don't even think of, they're not thinking about Dr. King at all. I believe that is the biggest farce that we can ever portray on our people. We are, if we were to do an actual seminar on looking at some of the film footages across parades across the country, we would probably all fall out, because all they're going to do, once they get the initial parade over, I mean the floats and the people, once that is over with, we go on to pure. It's just pure over. It's just drinking, eating, and celebrating something they don't even have a clue about. And then they get mad when they find out that, wait a minute, we spent all this money on this parade that we don't even have enough money for. Half the parades can't even function no more. They don't cut so many of them out. that they can't even go to the whole area, don't even have them all the way, then each municipality is using the money of the taxpayers for these parades, and then they come back and say, guess what, guys, we're broke, and we're going to have to start taking your pensions. So we're paying for stuff. That does not want no parade when our pensions are about to be taken. Think about that.
Yes.
They don't
even call it the parade. They don't call it the Martin Luther King parade down here anymore. They call it the Drum Major Parade. They switched the whole naming of the parade up. It's Drum Major Parade.
Yeah, they can't say that.
I don't know. It's like the shadows on the wall. When you were speaking on the Gandhi statue outside of the Martin Luther King Museum, we could care less as people. We don't even know anything about any one of them. We don't even know about Martin Luther King, let alone Gandhi. So they're not going to question anything what's going on around them. It's just sad. We're all shadows on the wall. Any figure or spearhead person whom has tried to lead up any black movement, we know nothing about. Rather it's Rosa Parks or anyone whom we think we know about. They're just shadows on the wall. We only know them by faces. We know them because they dedicate a building to them. We don't know any history behind what the dedication is on and they're playing off of.
I thank you about that because, you know, they spent a pretty penny for that statue, and I've seen it up in Washington, D.C., for Dr. King's memorial that they put. And let me just say this. You know, it's one thing to say we're honoring a person, but to put a statue up, knowing that the fulfillment of anything that he talked about has not even been closely touched. Even today, as the newscasters are talking to different participants of the parade, the main thing what it says, they kept saying, his legacy ain't been fulfilled. And I'm looking at them telling everybody that's on the news, his legacy ain't fulfilled. And I'm saying to myself, wow, isn't that profound? You're having a parade for somebody whose legacy ain't been fulfilled, and you're not doing anything to fulfill it. That shows you how blind we truly are. And so, in a nutshell, those of you who are trying to bring consciousness, the key word is consciousness, find you a conscious circle. I don't care if it's just three or four people. Remember, in that Masonic Bible, one thing it does state, and I will use it occasionally because I understand some of the stuff, remnant is the key word, remnant. It never said about the masses because the masses are mainly a mob mentality. It says a remnant is to be saved, according to that particular story there. And the reason why I use that, because it has fruition to what we're talking about. Many of us are trying to find a bunch of people, and I love these shows that we got here. We can talk because at least we can mentally getting stimulated and keep yourself going and do the things that you need to do. But half of what we're talking about, these people, our people, our relatives, don't even care. The conscious community is becoming unconscious. I know, and I'm not going to name who I think Brother Luckner know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
We got brothers in the conscious community who won't even get together, went to a trip to Kemet, came back enemies. You know, we can't get the conscious community even and get together anymore. It's all about that money. You can't, brothers now who is conscious, they want you to pay for their housing, car. When you get them down here, it'd be like, you know, there's no love for the people. It's love for that money. I could name some, but I'm not going to name them because it's not even worth it. But they want to be paid big time just to talk to us. You say, my God, I thought you was for the people. But we find out that they have made a business out of this. See, the problem is we're making a business out of trying to uplift our people. That came from the civil rights era. See, once you get Jesse and L. Sharpton, you got to pay them. And that's how that came. We got to pay these people to come and march with us. And then when they finish marching, they go home, and the problem's still there. People, we got to solve our own problems. Let's get your mind out of these no-good-ass civil rights leaders and all these preachers who claim to be for you. We need new up-and-coming leaders, young. I'd rather be young and middle-aged, because some of our older ones who got the knowledge, I'll take them as well. But we got to stop it, because they are the ones who are stopping it. We mentioned that Boulé, and I'm going to go take another call. Dr. King was part of the Boulé. I don't know if y'all knew that. And he was also, and there's a picture I want y'all to go look up. I got him on the website, www.drivebuster.com. He was also involved with communist activity. Now, whether it be good or bad, he was involved. Now, I tell people all the time, I can understand why the black individual, like Langston Hughes and all them, dabbled into communism, because when you see capitalism, what it's done to you, anything sounds good. And see, that's how they played us. It's like the two pillars. I'm going to give you pillar one and pillar two. Still the same pillar. Same thing. I'm going to give you two pillars. You got to pick one or the other. So I'm going to give you the same thing I'm saying about. You're either going to be a Democrat or Republican. They're the same pillars. And so communism and democracy, same pillars. Capitalism, same pillars, coming from the same people. So we're going to get the same results. Because really, anybody has a little bit of knowledge about what's going on, you know that they're considering with the duality concept, where I'm going to give you this one, even though I control that one as well. So you can pick that one, but I control it as well, too. So all the parties are controlled. And it's a strange thing because, you know, Dr. King was a Republican. Ask most black people what Dr. King was, and you'll find out they don't even know if he was Republican or Democrat. And here's another problem. And I know y'all getting tired of this part. People telling you, oh, we know our history. We know our history. We need to talk about something else. You run for those people. If somebody tell you that we as a people, maybe they know their history, and that's fine if an individual knows their history. I'm glad. But when they say a group as a whole know our history, that is totally ridiculous. Totally ridiculous. And that's somebody who wants to shove off the responsibility of him doing or her doing anything, because they want to say, oh, we know our history, but we don't need to hear that. Really? So I say flee from those who are saying that, because you will find out they have no intention of doing anything but making themselves sound big and so forth, so they can say, oh, we know. No, we don't know. I'm finding out stuff every day. A true researcher finds out stuff every day. So somebody tells me they got the answer, you run from them. And they tell me, oh, I got all the answers. I heard somebody tell me they mastered something. I'm not even going to name the individual, but he's in the world. He's mastery. Please show me where you master something at. If you living in a development, or you living in somebody else's realm, then you ain't mastered nothing. It's best to say, let's try to master something. Let me go to somebody else here. Anybody? I got, man, come on, call us. I see a few of y'all. I'm going to go back to... Brother Love, you still out there? Let me see. Brother Love was making noise. Let me hit Irene. You still out there?
Yes, I am. Coming with you, listening.
I know you got that movement for change, and I know you're dealing with. You have a young group of people. Keep it that way. If you get any wisdom from individuals that are older than you, make sure they are telling you responsible information, and they're not trying to just give you something that was told to them. One thing I'd like to say, that this is the talk where facts matter. We bring facts. You see, I'm bringing dates. I'm bringing things that you can tangibly go look up and see where the mistakes were made. And we don't want to say we made mistakes. Anybody telling me, I mean, I made mistakes. How do you learn unless you make mistakes and you analyze them? It's just a dumb person who don't realize he makes mistakes, so he can keep making them over and over. This is where we are at. We are believing so many misnomers. I asked the person the other day, have you ever heard of Agenda 21, which is the UN taking control over all resources and so forth? You would thought I was saying something foreign to them. I tell them all the time, just to test and see if they believe that these things are happening. Oh, President Obama, y'all look this up, and I'm sure Dr. King probably will pass out right now. He gave over 100 miles of coastland to the UN. So 100 miles in from all the coastland from here to California to the top is controlled by the UN. And their goal is when the time comes, they know that military personnel will not shoot on the U.S. citizenry. So they're taking all of the military people and relocating them all over the world, and they're going to create some wars so they can keep these brothers and sisters who were not going to fight against their citizens. Now they'll be out the country. Guess who will come in? These little guys with blue helmets on who don't care. Now, this is what he did. Now, we got people who are so delusional who say, oh, I got land, I'm sovereign, and I got this. They in the same region of the UN, coastline. So I'm dying to see how they going to react when they realize that, oh, I don't even own this. If someone jump off. This is stuff that we are delusional and we can't be telling, we can't tell people, man, that's not true. Because now they mad, because now they want to say, oh, well, you hating on me because I got some farmland. No, I'm not. And I'm going to say this to everybody. If you got farmland and you telling everybody, you already lost your mind. Because guess what they'll do if they feel that you have a big enough farm? They'll just put a chemtrail over it. See, so we need to learn not to tell everybody what we got going on. If you got it going on, don't tell people you got it. Because that's how it gets taken. And also, we got people who, if you got a little land in your backyard, just do your own little farming in the backyard. Do your own little thing in the backyard. Don't tell people what's going on. Because it's too late to be talking about buying farmland. And the first thing I tell people is, well, what happened to the black farmer who was trying to get his farmland? You know how much black farmland has been confiscated and we didn't get no help? I signed petitions when people were telling me about it. We couldn't get over 1 million signatures of people to stop them from taking the farmland. And then when they got the reparations, supposedly, it still hasn't even trickled to them. But we don't get no fanfare from these so-called conscious Facebook people. We're all over Facebook with every name from Assad, Assad, Kemet Fatah. Great names. Great names. But guess what? The land that these names came from, you have no idea that they're destroying it, taking it over. So it's just a play. It's a play on, we just personality figure. We so used to acting. We so used to being reality TV stars that that's what we're doing now. We just reality TV, Facebook conscious actors. And I said it, actors. Because when something's serious, we can't get nobody to say nothing serious about nothing. Everybody want to sit there and look at each other. And then, for instance, y'all chime in because I got some of y'all mics on. If y'all want to chime in, turn on a bunch of them now because it's getting to that time. If y'all want to say something, your hands are up. Feel free.
Yeah, drop on.
It's almost, I hear everybody. Go ahead. Somebody say drop on. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah. Well, I think all black America, all minorities need to read the Willie Lynch letter, and that would explain a lot why people are the way they are.
I agree. Any comment on that one, anybody?
That's the starting point. Can you hear me?
That might be
half of us
what,
can't even read. So.
Can you hear that?
Let's say that. Yeah, I heard you. Willie Lynch is what y'all know the story about the Willie Lynch story. Turn the lighter, the dark against the darker, the light against the lighter, the nappy head. Now, let's just say how effective that was. It was a time during Dr. King's era when they had the so-called college fraternities, and Spike Lee tried to kick on that a little bit, where you couldn't join unless you was lighter than this bag. It's called the bag test, the brown bag test. That's a form of psychological hatred. So that tells you right there that Willie Lynch syndrome is live effect. Your hair. Look at today. Dr. King and Uncle Tess, when he went around and all them black beauticians, Madam C.J. Walker made herself a millionaire with a straightening comb. Very smart. But you know what? Madam C.J. Walker had little knowledge about who we were, because if you go to Indianapolis, she has a theater with all the Egyptian a memorabilia inside. So she had some knowledge of what was going on. But she made millions of dollars. But here's the case. We spend, like the sister said, we consumers. The black woman spends almost close to $1 billion on hair that comes from India. That's a lot of money that we're giving to people. And I have to give Chris Rock some credit for that documentary that he had on hair. When he tried to give our hair back to people, they didn't want it. So you can see the psyche that they have about us that still lives today. Any comments from anybody? Is there a reason why is that hatred so prevalent today after all these years? And why
Hello?
Anybody?
Hello? Mike, check. Can you hear me?
Or some...
Go ahead.
I can't hear you. Tyre, go ahead and say something.
You hear me?
Yeah, I hear you, Tyre. Go ahead.
This is Brother Tyre, man. This is... A lot of noise in the background.
Hold on. Let me fix this.
Brother Tyre.
Go ahead. We can hear you if you speak up.
Yeah, Brother Tyre. You hear me now? Brother,
go
ahead. Hear me?
Just
Brother Tyre.
I hear you. Go ahead.
Listen. All right, good. All right. Three things I want to touch on. When Dr. King said to Harry Belafonte, he feared that he is leading his people into a burning house, and they had to be like firemen to put the fire out. I remember that quote he said to Harry Belafonte. So he's aware of the fact that of what had happened and what caused him to do what he what caused the result of what happened. He was aware of it. And then that's when he started calling the government of America a hypocrite. And so, and that, of course, that's in the state because that's when they're in the killing him. Number two, the lady last time I was on the phone, on the line, she said about Castro being a Zionist. Here's the problem I have with that. I'm not a pro-Castro supporter. Well, I used to work with a black Cuban who was born and raised in Cuba. And he told me black Cubans don't have to come over here because they have government jobs. And it said that the 65% of Cuba is black. So the fact that you say that he's a Zionist is kind of conflict when he actually offered the Albanese who was Farrakhan, Nation of Islam, 500 black students free medical training, free housing, room and board. That's kind of contradictory for him to be a Zionist and do that at the same time. And number three, the Nation of Islam, we have farmland. And we're getting to international trade, agriculture, and commerce. That's those three things I wanted to say. That's all I had to say.
I'm gonna let her comment on that, but I'm gonna be honest with you. Now, just because that has happened, then we can say that. Look at if we take what the Khazar has done. He has funded all our programs, and it makes him look like a philanthropist. You know, I'm not saying that Castro did, but I'm just saying that same mentality can be said for a lot of these groups. Look at the Rockefeller Foundation. Look at the Cecil Rhodes Foundation. All these are philanthropists that looks like they're helping us, but at the same time, they got a covert activity going on at the same time. That's
yes,
why
sir,
I told
right.
people they
yes,
have their hands. They
have
to be bloody.
I'm not saying he has skeleton in his closet. I'm just saying that it's kind of conflict. A black leader. As large as the office of Farrakhan had 2.2 million black men in Washington, D.C., me and you are both there, Dorian, is a kind of conflict that he would unite and have every black leader from and the civil rights movement to current meet with him. And it's just kind of conflict right there. I'm not saying that he has skeletons. Every leader on the planet probably got skeletons, including him. I'm just saying there's a little conflict. Why would he get them for him to be a Zionist? As you said, a Zionist. Why would he unite with one of the most pro-black leaders that we got? It's kind of confident.
Well, I'm gonna say this: if he, that's gonna be. You still out there, Malika? Malika?
Yes, I am.
Hello?
Yes, I am.
I want to set up a show too coming up because we still got a few shows. I want that show to be on these topics of the Cuban black connection because or the Fidel Castro connection because that needs to be very much looked upon because being that we have a state that is very well connected to Cuba and we know that the mafia was connected to Cuba at that time of all this going on as well. It behooves us to get a clear picture of what's going on, because I believe that in the next few years he should be dead. That's going to be something that's going to be talked about. So I guess if we get the jump on it, we'll be able to have a jump on it, because he may be dead already. I don't know, but just that he's going to have a hell of a conversation when they find out he's dead, when it's announced internationally, because it's going to be a lot of things said. But just like we said things about Mandela as well. All I'm going to say is this, and I'm going to make it clear to everybody. These gentlemen are in secret societies. We all seen a picture of Nelson Mandela in his Knights of Malta outfit. I'm not sure which one he was in, but he's in the Knights of something. He had the outfit on with the preacher. And so I know these entities exist. I don't know exactly why Castro would befriend Angola or what was the thing, but I know that he did give weapons to different places. He did help in some incidents, but I don't know if he was helping to put in the espionage crew or he was doing it legitimately. It's hard to say, because I must admit, the man deals with the Pope. And when the man deals with the Pope on that high level, I have to say to myself, what's behind that? Why is the Pope so beholden and friendly to him? You know, these things have to be looked at. So I think that would be a great show. Let's get that together. Call me, Malika, when you feel you got some info on that, so we can put that. Brother Tahir, I want you on that as well. And I think that would be something of interest.
I wanted to explain something to the brother.
Brother, let me
tell you something, okay? There are presently, okay, many black and brother sisters in Cuba that are suffering the worst kind of apartheid, okay? Just today, there was a black Afro-Cuban woman whose husband was detained because he's against the regime. They came into her door. They started knocking at their home. They wouldn't open the door, so they knocked down the door. They took all their things out of the house. They took him and they incarcerated him. And let me tell you something about these men when they get incarcerated, okay?
Hold on, you're gonna have to make it quick. Make it real quick.
Okay, they suffer torture, like and they get all kinds of tortures they go through because they're not for Castro. And that black woman that told you that, why is she here in the United States? If she feels that the black man and the black woman in Cuba has it so good, why is she here? Now that's contradictive.
Okay. Hold on, Malika. Hold on, you're going fast. We got a few more minutes left, and I'm going to let if you want to stay on just for a little bit longer, we can. But the show, all you were on there, do not hang up, so otherwise you would not be able to continue on. But let's just say this. I've heard today in the news that they're going to allow new cars to come down to Cuba. And they did a little bit of research. Now, according to what I heard, they got a car coming, a regular car that we're driving. It's going to cost somebody $90,000. I think a BMW is like $100,000 just to have an older. It's not a new BMW. This is just of BMW, and they said something that was profound. They said, this is a country that the average income was $25 a month. And I was like, whoa. And I said, a month? You can't live off 20. None of us would be able to live off. In America, can you imagine if we had $25 a month? And I'm noticing that a lot of these countries, Dominican Republic, Haiti, a couple other poor ones, they are living in abject poverty, practically, considering what we consider poverty here. And so I would think Dr. King, if he was alive, would probably say to himself, poverty is getting worse and worse all over the globe. We just happen to have the better poverty. And the reason why I say that, because when you're the richest country on the planet Earth, based off of the slave trade and based off of everything else they've been doing, of course we are the high-end slaves. But around the world, they are low-end slaves. We are the high-end slaves. That's all this is. America has us as high-end slaves because we are so rich in gluttonous of wealth that they never trickle down. But even when they trickle down, they got, you know, when people come over here and you find out they're amazed at how much we have. That kind of makes me wonder what they're going on in their countries. And what's happening in their countries, let's be honest, they're being under siege. You got these corporations have taken over major parts of all the world. The whole world is a farm right now. If you want to be honest, the whole world is a farm. It's being farmed out. The question is how long people are going to go along with it. Now, in this country here, or this corporation, I'm going to say it is a corporation. I say in country, but in reality, this is a corporation, everybody. Look it up.
That's right.
They're preparing. They are preparing. I hate to tell y'all this. They caught some white supremacists up in Kissimmee today. They're one day they're up in Kissimmee, Lake Wales, and some other area. It was on ABC News. So they got groups that are preparing for things, and these are probably low-level, dumb, ignorant white groups. But the weaponry that these groups have and the land that they were able to have. They had land where they were able to do maneuvers and was able to do shooting on the land. That's how much land they were having. See, that's the difference. You know, they are doing the things that you would say, well, you know, we don't think that way. Because they're preparing for something. And I'm asking everybody, prepare yourself. Prepare yourself. Do not take what's going on lightly. Obama is going to use executive orders. It was just in the news the other day. King shouldn't have been along with that. King would probably not. He should have. I'm just going to put it out there. He might have not. But if he liked it, these presidents that we had here, my goodness, the Kennedy brothers must have been princes to him. But what we have now is people who are getting ready to sign executive orders. So if the Senate and the Congress can't get together, guess what they're going to do? Sign an executive order. What an executive order does, it overrides anything they do, which means that's like dictatorial powers. That's part of the Communist Manifesto. I want everybody, if everybody on our next call, if y'all can get the Communist Manifesto printed up for you at Wednesday night, if y'all can do that Wednesday night, we can read through the Communist Manifesto, and you will see that we live in a communist country already. And I'm going to tell you why I'm telling you this. There's a Snicker commercial where Robin Williams is supposed to be a coach, and he's screaming, "This is for Mother Russia." He bites the Snicker bar, and he turns into what? A black man. That should be some type of wake-up call to everybody, what they're trying to tell you. They're pushing this agenda on us. They've been pushing it on us since the 60s, and it's very well being orchestrated to the point where it is in pure effect today. So I'm going to let everybody know it's getting late. I appreciate everybody on the call tonight. Send these off. These are blog talks. If you want to hear them yourself, you can download them yourself and listen to them. Those of you who are online, send them out. Those of you on Facebook who have friends that are a similar mindset, send them out. Don't give them to your aunt who don't care about this. Don't give them to your cousin who, you know, just brought to church last week. He ain't going to listen to this. Give it to those who you might meet who have like. Don't, you know, you're beating your head up against the wall with people who you are close to, you around you. They don't want to hear that. Our people will not listen to you or anybody else unless they got a Cadillac BMW and they live in a mansion like T.D. Jakes. They got to have those elements for them to say, "Oh, I listen to him." But If they like you coming off the street, that's why, you know, they really could not be true to that Bible, because the Bible says when one comes to you with knowledge, wisdom, it says, in all that doing, I seek the spirit of truth, and the truth will guide you into all truth, St. John 16:13. They don't want to hear no truth. If you bring this to the church and you cast pure facts, they are going to look at you as if you're crazy. If you find a church and say, thank you for that knowledge, let me know, I'll join it. If y'all find one that loves this type of knowledge, let me know, I'll join that church. But I'm sure there's not one out there. Because the minute I start talking about Kimmen and the now, and we start talking about some the Jews and how the Jews could not be a part of the Bible and how they weren't even around during Egyptian time, they're going to look at you like, uh-oh. Because they don't want to deal with the facts, because the story is going on so long. See, they have our story is called mystery, which means my story. Our story is a mystery. That's what they did. They got us as a mystery instead of telling us it's, and his is his story. Two different things. And when you get into the mystery, that's when you find out the real deep stuff. So y'all need to learn this and get involved with yourself. Know what your limitations are. Know who you can put up with. If you can't put up with our people, you're going to have a rough road trying to teach them, that's for sure. But you got to love them if you're going to do the type of work we're talking about doing. And that's reaching the young. Reaching the young. Anybody who's reaching the young, you're doing a good job. Reach the young, because they're going to need it. They're going into a transhumanist mentality now. They're about to hook up the computer to the brain. They got the Google already has a chip that can go into the brain and give you 3D dimensional internet. They already got this everything. They want everybody to be a cyborg. They're getting ready to put you into the RoboCop mentality, because they have police that are prepared to put on these uniforms. I hope y'all listen to me well. The place is called Dapper. Look it up. It's It's D-R-A-P-E-R, Dapper. Put Dapper in Google, and you will see some of the most sophisticated weaponry that they are preparing to unleash. That's why they're putting the drones out. They got everybody saying, oh, we're going to put drones. And sitting there, they got you knowing drones are coming. Believe me, they're going to use drones to fly over the airspace of America, which is illegal. But if they, only group I can see them getting upset, that's what Google's going to get upset. Won't be us, because they already followed us with drones on South Beach. When they brought drones to South Beach, when they had the Urban Weekend, drones was out looking at black folks. But one group ain't going to go along with that. And that's that good old boy, Protestant, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant, he going to fight back. And they know that. That's why they got everything prepared. So, again, let's bring up the paper. It's called the Communist Manifesto. Print it up, the planks of the Communist Manifesto. Come Wednesday, watch how much fun we have if we all have that piece of paper. We can all know what we're dealing with. Okay, everybody, good night. Take a good night, and I hope to see y'all on Wednesday night.
Good night, Brother Drybone.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night,
awesome show. Great night.